This is Batgirl, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to episode 214 of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me today, as usual, is the Comic Concierge. Hello, Dan.
Hello, how are you?
Good. I almost forgot what number we started with. I'm like, I know it's 14. And then I was like, 114? 214? I don't remember where we're at. So 214, I think, is the correct number. So we are back here once again to talk more Hitchcock. This would have been, or was, I guess, planned to be the last of our Hitchcock episodes until we called an audible, which we talked about a little bit in last episode's review of Psycho, that we're going to go a little bit further. We're going to push the limits. We're going to go into whatever, extra innings, overtime, sudden death. I don't know what you want to call it, but we're going to do some more Hitchcock coverage in a few future episodes. We'll see how many we get through, but we want to cover a few more. There was a few that weren't on the list of 10 that throughout this journey we've decided we want to cover. Dan, anything you want to say about that?
No, it's been a journey, of course, to going through all this. I think it's been, I don't, you know how much people enjoy listening to it, but going through it and watching it has been a lot of fun, learning a lot. And I don't know, there's something about this era that is just has me inclined to go back for more. So I'm excited that we're keeping it going.
Yeah, I am too. So we're going to cover a number of different films that we didn't have in the original slate. We'll talk a little bit about that at the end, but there's a few Jimmy Stewart or Cary Grant or Grace Kelly films that we haven't covered. There's a few that are just more notable that get a lot of recognition when you think about Hitchcock that weren't on our original list. So we're going to try to hit a few of those and see how far we can go with this filmography before we tap out to the suspense. So we'll keep you guys in suspense as far as how many episodes we're actually going to do on Alfred Hitchcock. How's that? So for today, we're going to be jumping into the 1963 American horror thriller film, The Birds, starring Rod Taylor, Jessica Tandy, Tippi Hedren, Suzanne Pleshette, and a few others. So Dan, I know we talked about it a little bit at the end of the last episode, but what was your experience going into The Birds?
Well, this was the first time watching me. I've never watched it before. As I mentioned, I've never seen The Birds. Have seen Birdemic, of course, which is a very different movie. Although not that different, oddly enough. but no, so this was the first time watch for me. Of course, like you know it, there's so many scenes that are, you know, if you watch the Oscars and stuff like that, that like this is always featured. You hear about it, but I've never sat down to watch it from beginning to end. So yeah, it was just kind of going in rather blind. I've heard, of all the movies we've done so far, I feel like I've heard the most mixed things about The Birds, but I was interested to kind of going in and experiencing it for myself to see where I fell.
Yeah, it was it's definitely a first-time watch for me as well. I have seen other films in its ilk, I guess you could say, like you mentioned some. You could throw a bunch of other ones that I'm sure we'll comment on throughout the episode that came later as far as in this. It's kind of like a sub horror genre, I guess you could call it. Like I know they reference it. I watched some special features about this and they talked about this being like Alfred Hitchcock's monster movie.
Yeah.
And I suppose it fits in there, but I guess I view it a slightly different. And they do talk about how this was like a turning point where it goes from like the monster movies of old, where it was more Frankenstein, Dracula, I don't know, maybe like King Kong or things like that, went into this new mixture of a different way to look at the monster in a horror film. So we'll probably get into that a little bit. But yeah, I didn't have any experience with this particular film. I was excited and a little trepidatious, I think, at the same time. But I was excited because I generally actually gravitate or have like a guilty pleasure, like enjoyment from films where there is a sole villain, I guess you could say, but instead it's like a man against nature or man against some type of other living being, whether it be, you know, ants or bees or spiders or birds or whatever the case may be. Like for some reason, I typically enjoy those films. So I was somewhat excited to view this one, but at the same time, I was a little trepidatious because it is from 1963 and I wasn't sure like how it would hold up, what would the special effects be like, what would the visuals be like, and all of that. And also something that we haven't necessarily seen Hitchcock do in the rest of the films that we've covered. So I was like, not 100% sure how I would land on this, but I was excited about the journey and taking a look at it either way. So obviously this film is set in mainly in a place called Bodega Bay. Starts in a different location in San Francisco, like in a pet store, but we go to Bodega Bay and it follows the travels of Melanie Daniels, who meets a lawyer in the pet store named Mitch Brenner. And then she tracks him down to where he's going to be and brings him some lovebirds. And then it kind of goes through her visiting of this city and this town, and interaction with Mitch. And then obviously we have some birds that come into play and take the movie in all kinds of different directions. Melanie Daniels is the one played by Tippi Hedren. Mitch Brenner is played by Rod Taylor. And then Jessica Tandy plays Rod Taylor's mom. So on first viewing here of this first time watch, Dan, how do you think Hitchcock did with his quote unquote monster movie?
Interesting. Of all the films we've watched so far, I feel like this is the one I'm the most conflicted on, because I think there are some moments in this that are just truly brilliant. Some actually like really captivating moments and scenes that are some of the like most complicated scenes that we've seen him put together throughout this retrospective. You know, certainly special effects are gaining a bit. Obviously there's still ways to go, but just really some like even some of the quieter moments that I'm like, oh, this is really brilliant. But at the same time, like, obviously there's some things that don't hold up. I'm not trying to hold that against the movie, of course. You know, this came out in 1963. But beyond that, like, I wonder, and I struggle with, is there substance there beyond those elements? Like, is there, you know, is this trying to say something? Is there something deeper beyond the schlock, deeper beyond the terror and the horror? And in, I feel like if a movie comes out today and there isn't much beyond that, we tend to criticize it. So should we not hold that same regard for a movie of this era? And maybe there is something. And I've been digging and trying to see, you know, thinking back at it, and I think there are certain elements to it, perhaps. And it's not just because, like, you know, the reasonings behind the birds attacking or lack thereof, but I don't know. I struggle. Like, is anything here? Is there a there beyond that? And I don't know. And when I match that with characters that, I don't know, I wasn't super inclined with, I didn't really enjoy being in their presence for a multitude of different reasons. I found it, I don't know, I found this movie to drag a bit in those moments because of my lack of engagement with them at times. I still think there are some moments of brilliance here, and you can see why it would be impactful to so many directors regarding the scene construction and like utilizing like the sound design in here can be terrifying at times. But as a whole, I found myself lacking. I didn't seem to enjoy this or walk away with it as fulfilled compared to some of the films even that we've watched recently, like A Rear Window or North by Northwest. It, to me, isn't in that ilk. It's probably honestly near the bottom. I think I might even got more of Rope than this at times. So I don't know. It's the one I struggle with the most. Like, but at the same time, like I said, I have a very polarizing feelings about this one.
Every time we're going to a new film, I'm like, this is going to be the one that Dan and I differ the most on. And then I always let you go first for some reason with your thoughts. And then I'm like, oh, guess not. I guess we're still somewhat in sync here, which is odd because we do tend to have different opinions and different perspectives on a lot of different films. But for Hitchcock, I feel like we've been somewhat in lockstep with each other. I mean, to varying degrees. I mean, there's some films that you probably liked a little more than I did or vice versa. But yeah. I also found this to be very polarizing. Like, I think there's a lot of comparisons that you can make between this and Psycho. I'm not putting it in the same level as Psycho or saying like they're like the same, you know, anything remotely similar as far as maybe quality goes, but I am saying that it's hard for me because on one hand this film does a lot of things like Psycho does as far as laying the seeds or the foundation for a genre or changing the way that people approach a subgenre or things of that nature. Like, I can see that it's impactful, right? Like, I watched one of the special features. I was watching this, and Amanda actually fell asleep in this one, which is the first one we've watched that she's fallen asleep in, I think, which, take that for what it is. But so I finished the movie, and I wasn't quite ready to go to sleep yet, so I started throwing on all the different special features. And there is a very interesting special feature on the Masterpiece DVD set that I have that talks about this being Hitchcock's monster movie and talks about the shift between like how monster movies were treated before and how they're treated now. And it does some really clever like interlaying of scenes from this and scenes from Jaws and scenes from like Tremors and a number of different films. It probably has like shots from 6 to 8 different films. I think even The Mummy is in there maybe. And like, it's interesting because like, they literally take some of the sequences from this film and then immediately or side by side play it with the sequence from one of those films. And it's crazy how similar they are. And it's not like it's ripped off or anything like that, but you can just tell that the influence was there. So like, you have a film that is clearly influential and you give it points for that, whether it be influential or impactful for the genre or the things that they were able to do from a special effects standpoint and some of the technology standpoint that they maybe advanced through the work of this film. And then you put that against like a lot of the things you bring up with, which is a story that for all intents and purposes doesn't have much there. Like, as far as anything to think about, anything to chew on, anything to like marinate with, I agree with you. I don't think the characters in this film are very, I don't know if likable is the right word or just like engaging. Like, maybe if they would have gone down the path of giving Tippi Hedren and Suzanne Pleshette a bunch more time together, perhaps yeah. I could have enjoyed that. I don't really enjoy Mitch Brenner's character almost at all. Like, I find him to be not very charismatic, not very magnetizing. Like, I at no point in this film was I like, give me more Mitch Brenner scenes, which take it for what it is. I know Jessica Tandy is like a very famous actress. I don't know if her character in this film really does much besides make me angry in this, you know, as far as some of the ways that she acts and interacts and reacts. So like, it doesn't have that. Like, I almost feel like Hitchcock at some point later in his career abandoned some of the things that I felt were really working for him in the beginning, which was really developing characters, making characters interesting, regardless of if they were lead, supporting, just cameo characters, whatever the fact, you know, whatever the case may be. He was very good at like making you interested in all the different aspects going on in his films. And I don't know if it, because these were a little bit more, I don't know if you would call this experimental or different things like that, but he seems to be doing a different thing with Psycho and a different thing with The Birds, where he's becoming more interested in the nature of the film versus and like pulling off these different feats than developing the characters in the story a little bit, possibly. Like, I even read something where he basically in the, I think this might have been trivia on IMDb or somewhere where I was doing a little bit of research, because obviously whenever you do that for movies, it always talks about different people that were considered for the cast and different people that they may have thought of. And I know Hepburn's name got thrown out here for Melanie Daniels. I know Cary Grant's name got thrown out for Mitch Brenner. And I remember Sean Connery's name got thrown out for Mitch Brenner as well. And there was one line on there that said it was a direct, I don't know if it was a direct quote or reference to Hitchcock, that said he considered Cary Grant, but then decided that he didn't want anybody that was that commanding in the film, because he wanted the film to be basically sold as a combination of Hitchcock's name and The Birds. Like, that was what was important to him. Like, that his name and just the idea that it's a bunch of crazy birds, which he wanted that to be the only thing that was carrying it and nothing else to distract from that. So I don't know. Like, it just feels like to me, like, I'm not saying that Psycho doesn't have a couple good characters in it, and obviously Norman Bates is like legendary. I get all that. So, but I feel like I started to see it there, and I'm seeing it even more here, where it's just like, the characters become secondary, and the films, in my opinion, suffer a little bit from that. Then I agree with you at the same time that this, if you're viewing this just as what it is, which is a schlocky, I guess call it monster movie or whatever you want to, you know, horror film. But then, like you said, how does it differentiate itself from any of the dozens of films we've seen like this that get absolutely crapped on, or at least not held to a high regard that we've seen over the last 20, 30 years? I don't know. What do you think, as far as, do you feel like there's been a shift in how he's treated his characters in the last couple films, or no?
Oh, I think with Psycho, I have a different opinion when it comes to the characters in that, because I do feel like even, you know, beyond Norman Bates, you know, the, I can't think of her name, but the leading character that we start with, I found her compelling.
Agree.
I think with this, though, I do have an issue with the characters. It almost feels like the movie is actively trying to get you to disengage with them. Like, it almost feels like Hitchcock himself, the script, just doesn't like the characters. Like, maybe Hendrick's character, I don't know, it's just, I struggle with understanding her motivations regarding nearly any decision she makes from the beginning. Like, I don't, like, from her making this decision to go up and travel to this guy's house, drop off these birds, like, it seemed, but I guess, you know, you get some hints regarding her past and how she seems to be a bit, flaky isn't the right word, but certainly is one that tends to leap before she looks. But I don't know. And the women in this, I think, almost universally are portrayed horribly. Like, every female character is, like, you know, or is hysterical, incapable of, like, finding any solutions whatsoever. Like even opening a door becomes, like, the most difficult thing ever. I don't know. It seems odd. And when you look back at Psycho and not necessarily the characters being lacking, but, like, even there, you know, again, like, you're seeing a lot of women making wrong choices, which is odd, with, you know, which I think, you know, other Hitchcock films had much stronger female characters. Rear Window, Notorious, you know, so I don't know if that was just a direction, like, where he was going. I don't know if we want to talk about the behind the scenes, but there are so many behind the scenes horror stories regarding this, especially regarding Tippi Hedren and how she was treated by Hitchcock, and she was, you know, injured on set and things like that. And I don't know if that, like, made its way into the film itself, but I do, just at times, I feel like this movie is actively making you dislike these characters. And I don't know if that's the point, because of course you're seeing, you know, all nature basically come down upon them. But then at the same time, if you are disengaged from these characters, then does their fate really matter to you? So that's where I struggle with the movie, because I'll look at these scenes and they're so well made. Like the sequence where, you know, you have the kids' choir in the background, she's, you know, at the bench, and then the birds slowly start landing on the playground, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And it just, the eeriness there, like, it, this does have some great moments of just complete silence, and there's so many moments like that. And it does make birds into this threat. Like, I, you know, thinking, oh, a movie about birds attacking, like, who's going to be hurt? You know, you can deal with birds. Thank you. It does a good job of, like, building levels up. If birds were to turn on us, like, we really don't stand a chance. Even if there were some moments that were maybe, after all these years, look a lot more, humorous than originally designed. But again, it just, like, I struggled with then, I don't know, finding the characters not only disengaging, but, like actively rooting against them, because I'm like, why are you making those decisions? And I know that's a trope of horror where people are going to make wrong decisions, but at least with that, you're, you know, a good horror villain, you're a good horror character, you should want to root for, or you should see them take charge or something like that. And I feel like we never get that moment within this. It's just chaos.
And right.
From afar, it's great. And from afar, it can be, like, really effective to look at. But then on a story perspective, I just didn't see much there.
Yeah. And I think too, like, as you're trying to, like, search for, and I don't think he intended to have anything to say in this film. Like, that doesn't seem to be Hitchcock's thing, right? Like, he's not making a bunch of films that are commenting on a lot of, like, complex life and societal issues outside of murder. And, yeah, you know, I think some of those
I think
types...
I think we get that somewhat with Rear Window. Like, I think I think that's the one movie, certainly. I think there are there, but I think the further we've gone along with this, the less and less that's happening.
Yeah, and I agree. I think Rear Window does have a lot to say. I kind of, that slipped my mind for a second, but there's some that are literally just about, like, can I pull this off, or what if this was the scenario type tales, where it's just going to put it out there and let you be more about, like, in the moment, where it's like, how do you feel in the moment while you're watching this? How does this affect you? Like, what emotions, what thoughts does it provoke in you, without necessarily, like, having, like, these big allegorical, you know, things, or these big dialogue things that are, like, really diving into it, at least in the later films that we've seen. And I really think in this situation, like, all he was trying to do is just pull off this film with birds attacking people, and, like, can I do it from a logistical standpoint? And I don't know if there was a ton of thought into some of this stuff, because even if you're thinking about it, like, okay, we have this village and maybe it's got a bunch of people that are making bad life choices, and then you'd say, like, this is nature's version of leveling the table with these really bad people, but, like you said, there's a whole segment of this town that is kids that are going to school, and they're not shown doing anything bad. Like, they're not shown being involved in anything that, so it's not that, because it doesn't work then with the kids. And, like, you have that whole sequence, which I agree is probably my favorite sequence of the film, with the crows growing on the playground behind her as she sits, which is weird because it's, like, put beside one of the creepiest, weirdest children's songs that I've ever heard in my life. That just seems to keep going. And I read, or in one of the special features, I don't know if it was the writer of the film or the guy that did the screenplay or somebody that was involved in the filming of it, that was putting that sequence together, putting that scene together. And there was a need for a children's song to play in the school while this scene's going on. And I get, he literally says that he goes to his kids, who he had school age kids at the time, and asked them for a popular song of the day that kids would sing at school. And this is what they gave him. And that's mind boggling in and of itself. But apparently, because they wanted to make the suspense and the tension build over so much time, that it was much longer than the song was. So he had to, like, take the song and then write all these extra stanzas to it to make it keep going, which, in order to do that, he had to become a member of the, whatever the acronym is, of people that write music for film or TV or however that works in Hollywood. So he had to, like, get a membership or apply for whatever, like, it's almost like a screenwriter's thing, but for lyrics, I guess, for music that's played in film. I'm showing a lot of ignorance here, but, in doing that, I guess because he's then considered a part writer of that song, like, he gets royalties on that song now, above and beyond, like, whatever he would have got for the film, which is kind of interesting. So but but anyways, that sequence is fantastic. But then obviously that's followed by the kids running through the streets and getting attacked by these birds, which again was some backstage probably horror, because they said that these kids were, like, made to run on treadmills, like, in front of each other and side by side of each other in order to pull this off. And, like, they kept speeding up the treadmill and kids were, like, falling and taking people out behind them and, like, all this other jazz. And, like, I don't know if any of them got hurt, but it was, like, literally saying that they're going so fast on these treadmills that, like, the first person would fall and take the two or three people behind them out. And, like,
yes.
I guess anything for a shot back then, but I don't think that would fly today. But yeah, it just makes me think, like, what is there? Like, I guess the best attempt at doing anything along that line would be the diner sequence, when there's a bunch of people discussing what's going on in the town and what they should do and if it's real or not. But then we also get, again, like you said, some some female characters that are just portrayed terribly in that sequence as well. And that's just a whole another can of craziness with the whole explosion with the gasoline. And they didn't pull any punches in this film. That's for sure. When it comes to like, is this over the top? No, just go for it.
Yeah.
What did you think of that sequence?
You know what movie reminded me a lot of, or I guess story was it, like, it got a lot of, felt very reminiscent of The Mist. And you know how, you know, they're in the grocery store and you see like all these people arguing what's happening, what's really happening. And this movie does have a lot of Stephen King vibes. I could see this being something that certainly influences him. Like, if, you know, from afar, you would think it's almost more of a Stephen King story than a Hitchcock story.
Right.
I do think it's interesting in that scene that it feels more judgmental of the concerned mom than it does the guy who's willingly to drink and drive, who's like, no, I can't drive yet, I'm not drunk enough. Which is like, this seems like a weird choice. Like, of all the guys, you're going to go with the dude who's like, but, you know, it was a historical hysterical situation. I did like that scene. And like you said, I think I felt like that was the one place where it was potentially getting to something. And but then again, like, it not much is really said, like, beyond just like Trump coming to terms with what is happening,
right,
per se. So
it was like the opportunity was there with that scene to do something with that, or to set some things in motion, but then they like decide not to do that. Interesting.
Yeah, it gives hints. Like I don't need an explanation of what's happening, that's fine, I don't need that. But you know, it's like, oh, maybe it's the end of the world or something like that, which is fine. But I felt like it's not why it's happening. It's in the sense of like the reasoning for the birds attacking me. It's like, what is being told here? And, you know, again, some people are like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, it's just meant to be a movie full of thrills, which again is fine. But I think for those thrills to be effective, I have to be invested into something. And I didn't get that here. And partially because, yeah, I am comparing it to what came before. And I guess it's similar to the issue like I had with Rope, where, you know, it was a movie built on tension regarding us, like, something happening that I don't really care if it happens or not because of what you've given me regarding the story. And and not that I like want to see like this kid get hurt or anything like that, but I don't know. It just, it felt very thin beyond just a technical standpoint.
Well, in the end, you're right. Like, do you care? If this, I guess let's specifically look at just the main four people that are involved in this, I guess you could call it like almost like a family unit. Like, do you care if they get away or not? Like, do you care if the birds get them or if they're free? Like, I know it's like human nature to hope that they survive, I guess, but like, do you really care? Like, are you going to be torn up if you see that they go down? Like, I don't know, like, if that's the case in this situation at all. I want to get into a little bit more of that, but before that, just to kind of tie up some loose ends or whatever on the effects and some of the other things of that nature. Another thing that this was instrumental in doing and whatever was changing some of the ways that they film as far as people in front of fake backgrounds or in front of screens. So obviously up to this point, they had done things with a blue screen, which they found was not going to work with these birds because of the amount of movement and whatnot. And if you've ever seen like an old film where they use blue screen, you can see the blue fringe or the blue tint around all the edges. So they developed a yellow screen, which was a different process for doing that. And the only studio in the country that had the capability of doing that was Disney. So this leads to like something crazy that I don't think we would ever see again. But there's effects when it comes to the birds themselves. Like, I think one of them was just one sequence. If you just take one sequence, I can't remember if it was the one where they're attacking the kids, attacking the phone booth, or if it's when they're coming out of the chimney. But there's a sequence where there's somebody from Disney involved because they needed their studio for the yellow screen. There's somebody from MGM involved. There's somebody from Universal involved. And there's somebody from Fox involved. Like, all doing different things that each studio had like the ability to do to make this work. And there was a couple other like lesser known studios or companies that maybe don't exist anymore and things of that nature. But I don't ever recall seeing a film that had four of the major companies involved in filmmaking all like partnering together to make that work from an effects standpoint. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. That's rather impressive, which makes you wonder just like how the rights work with this, but I guess they figured it out some way.
Or what kind of swing Hitchcock had in 1963 to just be like, yeah. Hey, I need your help. Okay, it's Alfred Hitchcock. I guess we'll do it. I did want to ask you about the sound of the birds. What was your take on the choice of how they made the birds sound?
I thought it was very effective. Like, I know it doesn't like necessarily always sound like birds, but I thought it did a good job of, because, which to me makes sense, because you want them to sound different because something is off. And then when that sound came, like it was eerie. Like it did have that effect. It was, you know, that something was wrong. And I thought of all the things that worked well with this movie, to me, the sound design was one of the best.
I do think, and they said this in the special features, that you could definitely draw some connections with some of the stuff they did with the sounds of the birds, and then how they do some of the stuff with like some of the sounds in things like Jaws and things of that nature. I was a little thrown off because it sounds nothing like birds, but it sounded like a kitten, or not a kitten, like cats that were getting attacked, and I can't remember what Amanda said. Like it was a combination of that and something else, but I do think it was like nerve-wracking, right? Like it is something that's not a fun sound to hear. So from that standpoint, it does add to the atmosphere of what you're watching that you can't really like. And I thought it was also clever that they're using a variety of different types of birds. Like this isn't just one type of bird that's going bananas. Like we have crows and sparrows, and there's a third type of bird in there somewhere.
Seagulls.
Yes. So we have at least three different types of birds that are going crazy at the same time, which was interesting. As far as the end of this film goes, and yes, spoiler alert for a movie that is 60 years old or whatever this is. The ending is obviously a sequence where we see them in a house. They've barricaded themselves into their house, right? They've boarded up all the windows and doors and things of that nature to try to like survive the night until the birds calm down, because what we've seen over the course of the film is that the birds are kind of going in ups and downs, right? Like they're going crazy and then they're becoming completely like not peaceful, but not attacking. So they're going in cycles, it almost seems like, as far as their crazed actions go. And so they're trying to wait that out. They're in the room, they're in the house trying to do what they need to do. Obviously some stuff happens where the Melanie gets attacked for doing what could only be seen as one of the dumbest things that you become used to seeing in horror films, where it's like, hey, I tried to whisper to that guy sleeping and he didn't wake up, so let me go do this on my own. And I haven't seen anything bad come from investigating these birds so far in this film. So they survive the night and they come out the next morning to obviously see a pretty horrific scene, right? Like you see all the birds just sitting. Like it's not that they've gone away, it's not that they've flown away, they're all right there. You open the door, they're there. There's thousands of them, and they're just chilling, except for the one that tries to attack his hand, I guess. And which is an interesting story, because he definitely said that there was one bird that was in the film that would always find him and always bite him, no matter what. Like most of the real birds they used had like actual names because they were somewhat trained. And he would ask when he came on set if this one bird was there or not, because he knew it would find him and bite him. But you see all these birds that are basically subdued at the moment, but you don't know what could set them off. And they're trying to get Melanie to safety because she's needing medical help because of her choice to go into the attic alone, which was a crazy scene in and of itself. And so they're making the decision to kind of get in a car and head out to try to get through the town, out of the town, to the most nearby hospital or whatever the case may be, some type of medical attention, right? And we see a sequence where they're very carefully and slowly loading everybody up into this car, watching as the birds are watching them, and then trying to take off. And they basically drive out of their driveway / whatever you want to call it, because it wasn't really a driveway. And the movie ends. at that point, like we see the Universal logo. What is your thoughts on how they chose to end this specific film?
I didn't mind that. Like I feel like the way this was going, you had to have somewhat of an ambiguous ending, because if you tried to give an answer or you tried to have some easy solution, I don't think it would have worked. I think it would have felt unearned or just like too much of a stretch. I think you like leaving it open, I think, makes sense in a sense because you don't know what's happening. So there's a lot of different directions that they can go. Maybe this is where they headed. And I thought, although narratively it doesn't give you a lot, the feeling, the imagery of that moment, to me, it's like perfect. Just end it there. There's not much more you can say. As mm-hmm. I mentioned, this was a movie that if you're at that moment in time, it was clear like there wasn't much more beyond but that those thrills and that element of it. So, you know, I think to give more of a complete ending, I don't know. I think maybe it would have dealt with one of my issues, but I didn't have an issue with the ending. How about yourself?
So I didn't necessarily, I mean, it catches you off guard at first, right? Like, and I am not somebody who opposes ambiguous endings. I generally like an ambiguous ending. Sometimes it catches you off guard and it's like, what the H is, that's yeah. how they're going to end it type deal. But most of the time I like an ambiguous ending if it's leaving you with something to think about, if it's leaving you contemplating what happens, what are the different possibilities and things like that. Like, I usually don't mind it. I don't necessarily mind it here. However, in the special features, there was an alternate ending that was completely written out as far as the screenplay goes, or like another draft of it, and with photos, like that sketches that were drawn of like what the sequences would be. And I will say, I don't think I would have minded if they would have went with this alternate ending, which I don't think ties anything up. It doesn't give you any answers. It still, to me, ends somewhat ambiguous, but I think it may have been more appealing to me. It doesn't change things a lot, but basically they get in this car and they start to drive. If you're familiar with the film, their house is on the opposite side of a body of water compared to the village or the town. So they have to drive around this body of water, get to the village, drive through the village to get to wherever they're going. And so it takes them on that journey and they get to driving through this town and you get to see a variety of different scenes or sequences where you see a shot of some people that have not made it, who have gotten... the birds got the best of them, and you see other folks that are still alive waiting it out in, you know, behind closed windows or behind doors or trying to peek out to see if it's safe or not. And then you see other people that weren't as fortunate to make it through the night and things of that nature. And then you also get this instance where, which is something that Amanda and I had been waiting for the whole film, right? Because you see the type of car she's in and you know what birds can do, and you're like waiting for this to happen, and it never happens in the whole film, but it would have in this alternate ending where they're driving, because this car is like James Bond car from, what is it, Goldfinger or something. It's like I don't know if it's an Aston Martin, but it's some type of car like that with a retractable roof, right? And at that point, most of those retractable roofs are obviously made out of some sort of fabric. And so they're driving through there, and as they're getting close to getting out of the town, birds have been like starting to follow them. So instead of just sitting around, they've started to like follow them in the air. And at some point, one of the birds or a couple of the birds kind of dive bomb the car and start just barely tearing that fabric on the car. So you can see like sunlight come through and a hole. And then little by little, the birds start doing it more and more. So you're seeing this top of this car getting like ripped to shreds as they're trying to make it through town. And then they're getting towards the edge of town as they're, you know, about to drive away from the town. And then the movie would have ended right there. I don't know how much that really changes things or not. I wanted to see that just for the birds attacking the fabric top of the car on a selfish level, but I thought it would be kind of cool to see them drive through the town and see some remnants of what happened, even if it's not giving you any answers as to why it's happening or if it's going to continue to happen or if it's done. I don't know. What do you think about that alternate ending?
I mean, I wouldn't be against seeing it for sure. Another ending that was, I don't think ever shot or put together, but that it was going to show like the Golden Gate Bridge just covered with birds.
Yes.
Which I think I would have probably liked that ending more, because it just shows you like, oh, okay, there is no hope here, because it's everywhere. So I don't know if I needed that additional scene, to be honest with you. I think I prefer it ending the way it did. Because I think it, I don't know, there's just, it's the ending on that quiet note to me almost makes it worse, because it's like, oh man, they're just like toying with them. It's just,
yeah.
It's just like what you're not doing, you know, that makes it even that more difficult. So I think I prefer it that way, but.
Yeah. I think it's also scary that this actually did happen in real life. Like, not this exact thing, but like that there has been situations where birds have gone bananas and like been attacking and dive bombing and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, one of them was said to have happened like right around the time where Hitchcock decided to like go ahead with this project and what. And make a movie out of it, but there's at least one or two sequences or described events of this happening. I think they're both maybe in California too, and one of them was where the birds had gotten kind of riddled with toxic algae from some type of sea creatures or little animals or whatever that they sea life that they had ingested, because they said they tested the birds and they were just like rife with this toxic algae or whatnot, and that they were just dive bombing people, throwing up like their half eaten food and stuff like that because they were sick, and just that would be terrifying. I just want to tell you right now, like, I'm not afraid of a lot of things that fly, but if I saw birds acting like that, I would be a little bit distressed. So
I mean,
that would be, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, even because those sparrows and things, like, you know, thinking they've been used a lot in, was it True Detective, or like just the way they, like, you do see mod, and ravens are kind of freaky, like you do see a bunch of them, and something about, like, because they are so smart, and you always wonder, like, they're up to something, you know. They're called a murder for a reason, like, there's you know,
when the group of you is called a murder, you need to be aware.
Edgar Allan Poe was on to something, you know.
So how about some Hitchcockisms that we saw here? I'll start. So obviously we get, this is based on a short story. A lot of his stuff is based on other works, and this one just happens to be based on a short story by the same author that the film Rebecca is going to be based off of. So obviously there's not a lot that is similar in that short story compared to what we see here in Hitchcock's film, outside of the fact that there are birds attacking or acting crazy in a town of people. But I think outside of that, there's not a ton that's the same as far as that goes. And then we obviously have another mom son relationship for sure in this film, maybe to an extreme, almost more than we've seen in some of the other ones. We do have the Hitchcock blonde and the Hitchcock cameo, which again is happens right out of the gate, so we don't have to be watching for it, I guess. Anything else that you picked up that we've seen kind of dealt with before in some of these other Hitchcock films?
We mentioned like how it, like there's been a lot of undertones of homosexuality throughout it, like Rope, for example. And I the way like some of the remarks regarding I can't think of his name of his why am I Mitch. So bad with names? Yeah, with Mitch, like, and I don't know, like some of the way, like the way Annie was talking, I felt like it made me wonder if it was hinting towards that, because, like, you know, she made a mark regard, like, probably not any girl could get, you know, get with, you know, be enough for him. And I didn't know if that was because of his mom or if there was something more there. So it did have me wondering if that was, again, like, you know, something that he's dealt with a lot in these movies to some more obvious extent. And it felt like that perhaps was something they was hinting at once again here, but I don't know if that's just me looking into something that's not there, but it felt like it was heavily hinting at it this time.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Anything else that you picked up on that I missed?
No, I can't think of anything else regarding some of the issues we've discussed regarding
Hitchcock.
Hitchcock.
Yeah, I will say, and just kind of some closing remarks to this, and I'm not faulting this film because it's not what the film was going for, so I'm not trying to basically be critical of a film because it's not the film I wanted to see versus what the film was and what they were trying to do. I talked in the beginning about how like I gravitate and kind of have a guilty pleasure towards these types of films, whether it be Arachnophobia or different things. Like I've said, I've seen different episodes of TV shows and movies that deal with killer ants and bees and all that kind of jazz. And I typically like them, but the reason I gravitate towards them is because I like to see the human aspect of it try. And it's the same with a lot of other horror movies too, because you see this in like The Predator or Alien or things of that nature, where the human side of it has to observe and figure things out in a way where they have to try to not necessarily understand why the things are doing what they're doing, but they have to try to distinguish patterns. They have to try to identify like methods of survival, or like how, like even in Jurassic Park, you see it like, right. You know, the one dinosaurs you can't make sounds, or the other ones you can't move, or different stuff like that. Like, I'm not saying like all of these films have to have that, but that's one of the things I really enjoy about those films, is trying to figure out how they figure that out and try to figure it out alongside them, and then figure out how they're able to kind of follow those rules that they kind of discover to hopefully survive in that situation, or to put away the you know, the impending doom that these creatures are potentially causing. Like, that's what really drives me to like having the guilty pleasure for these types of films. And I was a little disappointed I didn't get that with this film, but I understand that that's also not what it was going for. But it's hard to not watch this and be in and trying to be like figuring out what's happening, because outside of maybe the birds are acting a certain way on high tide and then not on low tide, like, you can't really reason too much of like their pattern of what they're doing and when they're doing it. Like, I know that they keep hinting that the lovebirds have some type of connection with this. That's like why when you see the fact that they're going to take the lovebirds in the car with them, I was like, ooh, that's probably not a great choice, because half of me feels like they're only attacking this town because the lovebirds are in the town. I don't know why that, what sense that makes, but she brought them here and the birds started attacking. Like, there's got to be something here. So like those types of things were stuff that I was like really kind of like, I don't know, selfishly hoping for that would be here. And obviously it's not going for that. So those things are not here, because it's definitely made to be something that's not explainable outside of nature versus humans, I guess. But any other final thoughts that you had of this one, things that you like that you haven't got a chance to talk about, or something else that you didn't necessarily work for you?
No, as you mentioned, like it's, I'm not trying to, take issue with the film, because it's not trying to be more than this, you know, this thriller. But to me, I'm just trying to hold it the same regard we would in a movie that came out today, in the sense of, if there wasn't any substance to a film beyond that, we would, you know, necessarily take issue with it. Plus, you know, I'm also looking at it in the retrospective of Hitchcock's career so far, and, you know, this is far better than the majority of films I'll watch on a technical standpoint for a lot of reasons. But I compare it to what we've gone so far, to me, it's just, I don't know, I feel like he's done far better here. And it just, I don't know. I just, I think if you're going to watch Hitchcock, I think there are a lot of films that we've talked about so far I would direct you towards before we go to The Birds.
Dan, there's a television sequel that was released in 1994 entitled The Birds 2, Land's End. Any interest?
Oh, man. Is it like basic cable, or is it?
No, it says television sequel. It also says that the director removed his name from the credits, and it also says that Tippi Hedren returned in a supporting role, but not playing the same character.
Yeah, really, that's interesting.
Why would you come back and return role and not play the same character? Like, that makes no sense. Anyway. So that's The Birds, the 1963, if I get the year right. I think that was what year we were in.
Yeah, 1963.
The only other thing, that last comment, because I forgot to say this earlier, one of the first things that Amanda and I said to each other, because we, in this first set of 10 films that we've covered, we were going in chronological order. So we started back in the, what was it, 1939 ish era, somewhere in there, and we've gone all the way up to 1963. And even though that this film does a lot of things from a special effects and from a that standpoint, it did strike me that the most modern film that we covered out of the first 10 to me also looked like the oldest. Like,
yeah,
maybe that's just me, but it looked like the one that should have been the 1939 one versus what we got. So I know it was hard what they were doing, and I know it's a feat that they were even able to pull off what they did, and it looks better than it should have, but it does kind of come across weird that like the most modern one was the, to me, the oldest looking one as well.
I think it probably helps that it's trying to do so much more. Like, it's taking these bigger making birds look like they're attacking people is hard thing to do. I think that certainly is making it not hold up as well compared to something that is a bit more reserved, like Rear Window. You're literally just looking out a window, or even something like Vertigo. But
I do give it credit though, because it was using mechanical birds, real birds, hand puppets, and like I don't even know what else. And I couldn't necessarily tell the difference between all of them. I mean, maybe I could if I looked real closely and rewatched it. But
yeah, there were times when the one time when it was the final scene where you had the seagulls and he's like putting his hand out to try to close the door. like those were clear.
I get that.
So,
but also there was a number of times. Sorry, I'll let you continue. I didn't mean to cut you off. But there's also a number of times where I guess I will give the actors credit for working against a screen and doing this, because there was two or three sequences where they're literally acting like they're getting attacked by birds with no birds to like give them even a frame of reference.
Yeah, I do think too sometimes, like when you had the sequences, especially the first one where like the sparrows come through the fireplace and they're all over, but like it's not really impacting the room itself all that much. Like that to me is where there's a bit of disconnect here and there, because it's like you have these birds and they're all over, but it's not, you don't see it really impacting the environment all that much, which I know is like really difficult to do in 1963. But when you did see that happen, like that sequence, and we mentioned within the phone booth and the explosion, like it was that more impactful. But when that didn't happen, it was like you said, it didn't. It was like, oh, this does not look great. This is looks a little bit like, you know, just lines drawn on the screen. But you know, again, even with that, like that was my least issue with it. My problems with it, like that, I'm far more willing to forgive beyond some of the other issues I had.
For sure. So like we said earlier, we're going to continue on, even though this has been the first 10 films, we're going to do a little bit more, a little extra Alfred Hitchcock content. So we're going to start that we won't be going in chronological order anymore, guys. We're just going to be jumping all over the place. So we're going to start that by going from 1963 all the way back to 1940 for the romantic psychological thriller starring Laurence Olivier and Joan Fontaine from 1940. It's the film Rebecca that we're going to be covering next. Dan, like we've done every time, just give people a quick rundown of if you have any experience with the film Rebecca.
I've never watched any of it, so I don't honestly even know what it's about, except for I believe Rebecca is not even a person or something like that. I don't know. I've never watched it. I just heard very great things about it, and I'm glad we're going back to watch it.
Yeah, based on the 1938 novel entitled Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, who was the same person that Birds was loosely based off of. And this one received 11 nominations at the 13th Academy Awards. So I'd be interested to see what we're getting ourselves into. So stay tuned for more Hitchcock coverage as we journey into 1940s Rebecca. Dan, if people want to keep in touch with you or reach out to you in social media, what's the best way to do so?
Just search Comic Concierge. You'll find me on most social media platforms.
Absolutely. And you can search me at Optimus Solo. You can search the show name at Cinema Geeks. Just search us out on the release on Facebook and Twitter/X. And then you can keep in touch with all things on the network by going to the Geekcast Radio Network. And you can see a bunch of different written content, podcasts of all different kinds and natures for all the different geeks out there. We have a lot of different content covered for sure, whether it be video games, cartoons, movies, TV series, and all of the comics and all kinds of stuff. So make sure you check that out as well. So that does it for this episode. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to more Cinema Geeks.